This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Stop. Stop it. Stop it right now.
I love doing that with you.
All right. It's just like dogs with a tennis ball. It's terrible.
I'm always worried about people who that's the first thing they hear. Like, it's in their car. They download the episode. They don't know how high the volume is because they were listening to the 9.5 minute version of November Rain the day before and just singing real loud. And it's just like turning all the way up. It's like, Beyond!
All right, so welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 407. I'm Max Scoville. Joining me, Marty Sliva.
Hi, Max.
Brian Altano.
Brah!
And Andrew Goldfarb.
Hey, Max.
How you guys doing?
We're doing real good.
Yeah, it's a good Monday. The beginning of a new week.
Did we have nice weekends? I want to go around the table. Did we have nice weekends? Andrew, did we have nice weekends?
We had a nice weekend, yeah. I hung out with Marty and did some D23 news. I hung out with Marty and did some drinking.
Wow. So, all right.
Fell asleep in his arms.
I played some Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Everybody loves Rapture.
You lost all the ghosts.
Everybody took a Napture.
Everybody's Gone to Ravens.
It was good. I'm glad there's no conventions for at least 24, 25 minutes.
Yeah. 2 weeks. Two weeks. Less than
PAX. All four of us will be at PAX. Yeah. We have a meet and greet on Saturday night.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. at the old candy store.
Wow. It's hard to book that venue, but we finally got it.
We've got a bunch of old emergency candles. We're going to be exploring a mine, so if you'd like to come with us.
That would be an incredible meetup if it was
meet us under the old flagpole.
I actually love the idea of us doing meet and greets that aren't at bars or restaurants.
Yeah, at like abandoned hospitals.
We're going to Howe's Cavern in upstate New York, and we're all going to get married on the Love Rock.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, it is.
We're having a meet and greet slash a drag race out at Dead Man's Curve. So if you want to prove that you're a tough guy,
if you dress your car to look like a Twisted Metal character, you automatically get in first. Let's talk about some PlayStation.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Quickies with Andrew. I made the PowerPoint. This is a Word document.
This PowerPoint.
Max, how many months of your year? So I was like, how do I do the,
This is Quickies with Max.
The only difference between me and you is you're better at faking it.
No, 100%. 100% true. 100% true.
Quickies with Max.
Yeah.
Call it.
Yeah, okay.
Hosted by Andrew.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can.
Yeah.
You've got your papers ruffled. We're in that shape.
All right.
So dilated.
All right.
D23 is a big D23, thing, yeah?
Yep. They did some cool video games announcements. There were lots of cool movie things, like Rogue One and stuff. But games had some stuff. The biggest was Kingdom Hearts is getting a Big Hero 6 world.
Yeah.
Which is like, I would never, ever have predicted that, but it looks incredible.
Yeah. It takes place canonically after the movie.
Which I like.
You're buddies with regular Baymax, but then there's like sad, dark Baymax.
There's an evil one.
And so spoilers for Big Hero 6, it's the Baymax that was left behind in the portal, apparently. Yeah. He was like gone crazy or...
Oh. That's like really... Dark.
Yeah, like, isn't that kind of that he like went insane because he was left alone in this portal?
That's horrible.
I kind of love it though.
Really?
It's super dark.
That is really messed up.
A really, really interesting choice to partner here. I mean, Big Hero 6 is based on a Marvel comic. I think a lot of people forget that. Very heavily anime influenced. So I can see why they would be like, this will do well with a primarily JRPG property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also not really, like, it's not you think Big Hero 6, you don't immediately think Disney or Marvel, but it is both those things. Mm-hmm.
And it's also a cool world. Yeah. Like San Francisco or whatever is like awesome.
Yeah.
Like I really like that, the world they built in the movie specifically. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for this.
The one piece of art they showed was really cool. Sora's like riding on the back of Baymax and has the Keyblade and is fighting evil, dark, spooky Baymax.
I really enjoyed the short they showed before that of the dog.
Oh, yeah. That was real sad.
Yeah. It was happy name.
That girl left that boy.
Yeah. On a similar note, we're also getting the Keyblade in Disney Infinity.
Yeah, so it's an ultimate unlock in Infinity. Yeah, so it's 3.0. Like when you get everything else, you get that, I guess. I think that's cool. I think that's a fun little... Neat little thing.
There are like a few video games a year where I'm kind of like, man, I wish I had kids. And Disney Infinity is one of them. Like that's the kind of game I would like totally on a Saturday afternoon just boot it up and just play for a few hours. Just because it's just a really dumb, goofy sandbox. And I could do that by myself, but I don't know. I just feel like it's totally a multiplayer thing.
They showed off the Episode 7 toys too. Yeah. So there's like Finn and Rey, which is just cool. And they're actually voiced.
Did you see the Death Star?
Yeah. That's awesome. And they're being actually voiced by John Boyega and Daisy Ridley, which is cool. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I think it's cool that they, like the fact that this happened at all at D23 is a really cool example of Disney kind of getting it. That, like, at the same event, they showed Civil War footage and a bunch of new Star Wars information and all their video game stuff. Like, they're very finely cohesive, and it's, like, one Disney. Like, as lame as that sounds, it's not just, like, our movies arm and our production arm and blah, blah, blah. Like, I like that all these worlds are kind of coexisting.
Which is, it's exciting for us, because we, you know, people who enjoy video games and movies and TV shows, it ripples through everything, and it's good to see that they're calculating that and not just sort of just being like, oh, well, we have this thing over here and it doesn't communicate with this thing over here or this thing over here. Like, all their universes are literally coming together in their theme parks, in their video games.
They have a monopoly on childhood, basically.
Yeah, totally.
They just have this amazing, like, sort of singular vision now and like singular voice, and everything is sort of held up to these certain standards.
I love it.
Which I think is really great.
The one area where they have been kind of, I would say, lacking compared to everyone else has been games, though, which is interesting.
Like, yeah.
I mean, Kingdom Hearts and Disney Infinity are probably the two kind of safest bet, Disney property video game components. EA hasn't really proven themselves yet. I mean, Battlefront looks awesome, but like that whole, you know, that's kind of a gray area, you know?
And I mean, I'm assuming the Motive / Visceral game is going to be rad, but
it's a ways off.
That's so far away. Yeah. That's the thing.
Disney Infinity is brilliant, though, because like we, you know, kind of, you know, bitch and moan about like licensed games being awful and like product tie-ins. This is the perfect platform for that, because they're just like, hey, we made some toys and they work in this game. Yeah. And it's basically like, how do you package DLC? Well, there you go. You know?
I mean, it's funny. In like the 16 and 32-bit era, we would have gotten all of these things and properties would have had their own games that they might have been really crappy.
No, I mean, during the 16-bit era, we would have gotten incredibly awesome 2D sprite-based platforming games from Capcom.
Yeah.
But everything.
Yeah. Three years later, it would have been really god-awful 3D platforming.
Totally.
Yeah, Marty and I were just talking about this, that like there aren't tie-in games anymore, like at all. Like the fact that there is no Force Avengers Awakens game. Video game or Avengers game or anything is like... Or even
Jurassic
the Dark
World, right?
Jurassic World. I mean, they got Lego and stuff, but like, I mean, for the most part, like we don't... The days are basically gone where you get like a crappy Dark Knight game connected to the movie or whatever.
That's the thing that's also crazy. Like some of the biggest movies of the past decade, like there was no Hunger Games actual like console game. There was no Twilight game. Like,
and Dark Knight, I just said it, but Dark Knight was the first one I remember like being surprised at that. Yeah. Like being,
was
like,
there an Avatar game?
There was an iPhone game.
And there was a Batman.
Ubisoft. It was a Ubisoft game. Yep.
There was a Batman Begins game too that was rolled out.
Yeah. You know what would have been a great Twilight game? Would have been Vampire Baseball. From the one worthwhile scene in that entire awful movie, where just they can jump high and they can eat a deer. if you lose their match, you have to chase down a deer and bite it in the neck.
Dark Knight got an iPhone game, right? That was like really it was one of those Game Loft open world kind of.
Oh God!
Oh really?
And like Jurassic World got a park building simulator that was basically a reskin of something they built.
Yeah, but mobile is sort of the Wild West.
Yeah.
Mobile is like. Yeah, all those tie-in games come to... There was a Hunger Games game. Yeah, I guess, like, mobile is where that stuff lives now. Because you're like...
I mean, even, like, Age of Ultron, right? Like, why wasn't that, like,
that got Disney Infinity.
That's the whole thing. Is like, Disney Infinity is like, that platform
that's the catch-all
like, for it. It's going to be Disney Infinity and Lego. And Lego Dimensions is going to break that down a whole lot. Because, like, you look at, like... Jurassic World games or Jurassic Park Lego games, I feel like that was kind of... Like, the first Jurassic Park, everyone loves it. Second one, yeah, all right. Jurassic Park 3, you're getting kind of in the weeds there. Yeah, and it's like,
I don't remember anything from that movie.
Yeah.
No, same.
So, like, how do you...
You don't remember the part where four people had to stand on colored blocks at the same time to lower a car from a tree, and then they all punched a clown? Like, yeah.
William H. Macy has some acting chops.
I know. And that movie did get off the rails. But, yeah, that game was, you know, like, it was an interesting way to revisit Jurassic World, but it's ultimately slapstick. And the same thing I feel sort of Disney Infinity is, it's not slapstick, but it's obviously a kind of cartoony.
Well, you
open
get to
world
do
game.
with these toy packages, you get to have kind of vertical slices where it's like, oh hey, like, I mean, I don't know if they're gonna do a full blown Scooby Doo video game for like Lego.
I think it could
work if they really put their minds to it.
But dude, Lego
More
Dimensions,
likely, it's gonna be just part of Dimensions. Yeah,
and that's the thing; it scratches that. Like I talked about this in GameScoop. I guess I haven't talked about it here. Lego Dimensions was my game to show at Gamescom because. That game is so, like, the amount of fan service they put into it doesn't, it's like, they didn't even have to do this, but, like, they, like, the Doctor Who one I was talking about on GameScoop, like, if you die as Doctor Who, like, you play as the 12th Doctor, but if you die, you respawn as one of the other Doctors, and if you go into the TARDIS, like, depending on which Doctor you go in as, the whole inside is different to correlate with the show, and they played the theme song from that, like, that era, and, like, in the Wizard of Oz world, if you walk off the edge, you fall down, and there's a... like Kansas level that's just a secret that's there as a joke basically.
Yeah.
And like this the Scooby-Doo world is all cel-shaded and if you drive anyone else in there like you become cel-shaded and it matches the art style. And,
no,
like,
there's so many like, I really
smart,
love stuff like that.
Cool things in that game.
They did it with Jurassic World actually. I was telling Max about this but they had Malcolm mode and you basically unlocked it and it changed all the voice clips for everything in the game to like
That is really? Like awesome.
It's really smart and they also had Nedry mode where he was just like is Dennis Nedry being like, you didn't say the magic word. But every time you punch someone, it was like, It's so stupid, but it's like little things like that are really goofy.
They're charming. And like, for me, there's a lot of that in Dimensions. I'm curious to see, like, I wrote a thing about like Portal. There's like Valve approved Portal content that takes place after Portal 2.
It's grown ass adults making toys.
Yeah.
You know, and it's them channeling their love into something that, you know.
That being said, I do kind of want like a Force Awakens dedicated console.
Like
game.
A Tyrant, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
like, and it's like, I look at Battlefront, I'm like, God, I wish they had a campaign.
We're getting the Jakku level, I guess, and that's. Like,
yeah.
They should also.
So that's being hyped up as being like our first look at Planet Jakku, but it's the battle of like they showed one piece of concept art for that, and it was regular X-wings and regular stormtroopers, and I don't think we're getting Force Awakens stuff because the whole thing is at the beginning of Force Awakens we see like all these downed Star Destroyers, all this junk and stuff. This is explaining how that junk got there. So this is still basically original trilogy
right after Jedi.
So it's not gonna
that
be.
Makes sense.
It's gonna be a new. It's going to be a vaguely Tatooine-esque looking level, but we're probably not going to see any new hardware or vehicles or anything.
Yeah, because EA basically said, you know, we've been working very closely with the people making the movie, and we're trying to like replicate that battle scenario as much as possible. But they're like not showing any of the new X-wings, like the black and gold one that his name has.
Isaac.
Marty Sleva. Man, we got way off the rails.
Anyway,
Longies with Andrew.
A lot of Star Wars stuff.
The other thing was a Darth Vader themed PS4.
Yo, it sucks.
But it
really sucks.
The console looks fine. The controller looks awful.
Can I go off about this? I really hate this. There are so many cool high-tech things in the world of Star Wars, and none of those things have a picture of Darth Vader on them.
Yeah.
There are a ton of really cool high-tech things in the world of Batman Arkham Knight, and none of those have a picture of Batman on them.
Yeah.
Like, it's just – I wish that somebody could just be like – let's make it like let's add like a layer of kind of role play to this.
Yeah, make it look like
it exists in that world,
which they nailed for the Star Wars Xbox 360.
Exactly,
R2. It made R2 noises.
R2 looks like something. If you had covered it with sand and thrown it in the corner of a Jawa sandcrawler with a bunch of like little Jawas tooling away at it, and an eyeball pops out of it or something, it would have looked like something from Star Wars. And even the controller was like, you know, they made it C-3PO gold. It like had the same look to it. It didn't have a picture of C-3PO's face on it or his hands holding it or whatever. I mean, I think. I'm sort of split on this because I think that like the PS4 looks interesting, like it's a cool print. I could go without the all over print Star Wars thing that they're doing and everything. Did the same thing with the GTA one where they just wrote Grand Theft Auto all over it. Personally, my PS4 sits in an entertainment center, so this means nothing to me.
Yeah.
But I know there's a lot of people like that to show off their consoles, and I'm totally with Max. I would love to see something that looks like model it after the scene where Darth Vader gets into that sphere and the lid
make
comes
it look
down.
Like the surface. Oh, of
what
the
is
Death
that?
Star.
His bathtub.
Make it look like weird paneling with wires and tubes and stuff. There's so much great design. Just
wow, a Death Star one would have been so smart. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would have been. I mean, there's a term that Lucas used when he was making the costumes, which was Greebly, which was a thing that you didn't really know what it did, but it looked high tech.
Yeah,
and like you could just put a bunch of those on a PS4, it would look great.
Yeah, yeah, it's every time point. A kid is drawing a robot and he draws squares and circles and knobs and levers and stuff like that to make it look like it's high tech. But this is just a picture of Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, if you're on the fence about getting a PS4 and you haven't gotten one yet, like, yeah, this is an awesome looking system. It's a great bundle. The controller we didn't really talk about. That's a little bit more like
the controller's like his chest piece.
I think the controller's the worst part.
I think it looks tacky.
I've seen Star Wars a billion times. I didn't get immediately that they were going after.
No, it looks so weird. Like three of the face buttons are white, and then the circle is red.
Well,
the bumpers are red and blue.
Yeah. It might look better in person, but I think that they really missed the mark there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like you've got a cool machine that lights up, and it could look like anything. It's very possible that this is a weird rule set up by Sony.
Yeah.
Like you can't overbrand your brand on top of the PlayStation brand.
That could be.
That might be it, actually.
How awesome would it be to see a Lego-branded PlayStation?
Mm-hmm.
Like just a red one that has brick patterns over the top of it.
That'd
so you
cool.
put your Lego Dimensions dudes all over it.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be brilliant. But like, I don't know if we're ever going to see that because Lego is like another huge, massive toy giant, and I don't know if Sony wants to be like,
you're totally right in that it might be some sort of patent thing where you're not allowed to actually mess with the exterior. You can't do like the Pikachu N64 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I remember like the 20th anniversary system they did was gorgeous because they got to go with the color scheme. They did the all-over print thing, but it was kind of subdued.
Yeah.
And the controller was obviously throwing back to one that they used to make. And it's like there's something about seeing those colors that make me nostalgic, and I don't get that from just seeing a picture of Darth Vader on something.
Yeah.
Like you can go on a decal site and buy a sticker if you want
to
put a
sticker. That's what I was going to say. That's what this looks like to me. This looks like when people go on eBay and they get like a custom printed sticker for the front of their PS4.
Yeah. Well, not even to mention the fact that you can remove that part of your PS4 and customize it. Like you don't need to buy a separate PS4 for that. Mm-hmm. Like that they should just have a store for this kind of stuff where if I wanted to trade my PS4 faceplate, I can do that, and I don't need to buy a whole new one. So.
Yeah. So one of the other weird things about that, though, is that the bundle also comes with a handful of old Star Wars games, one of which is Super Star Wars,
which is like really
never
weird.
Left Super Nintendo.
And that's the insane thing. It's like, once again, like with Rare Replay on Xbox One, like Sony and Microsoft are kind of doing a better job at publishing old Nintendo games than Nintendo is.
Absolutely.
Like, there are more playable N64 games on Xbox One than on Wii U,
which is
weird.
Yeah.
And
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, the four games are Super Star Wars, Racer's Revenge, Bounty Hunter, and Jedi Starfighter, all of which are going to have, like,
three of those
support.
Are PS2.
Yeah.
But Star Wars being a Super Nintendo game,
really
I don't know if we've actually ever seen that re-released since. Was that even on the Wii? On the virtual console?
I don't think so.
No, right?
I don't know, yeah.
I mean, not to my knowledge. And like
that has been a Super Nintendo exclusive for, like, 20 years.
But it's just also weird. Are they just going to do that one? Like, are they going to do Empire and Jedi?
I mean, you got to do Empire and Jedi. Jedi is really cool.
I really hope that this means that they're going to be just like one of my biggest concerns with LucasArts going under was just the lack of archival.
Yeah,
like the catalog.
It seems like between, Day of the Tentacle is getting it too, but. Grim Fandango. Like, it's the fact that Sony was actually going to be like, hey, let's put this stuff on our platform. That's a good thing.
Yep. Do you?
That image leak out from D23 of the press conference where they were talking about this, and who's standing front and center? It's Adam Boyes.
Yeah.
And he's just a guy. By the way, Adam, I don't know if you listen to the show. You've lost a ton of weight.
He looks great.
I don't know how you're
really
doing
good.
This. Congrats. Yeah. Amazing work.
I don't think he listens to the show. But
no, well, maybe his friends do. Pass it along. His friends. But it's him front and center because I know that people like him care. Like, it's a guy who's just like, let's find games that people care about and put them front and center. And, you know, it's really cool. Like, you know, I don't feel like we got that through the LucasArts era where people were just sort of like, yeah, we have these old games. We can re-release them maybe. Like, no one was really like, here's that collection. I mean, Max and I have a friend, Ryan Scott, who we do Comedy Button with, used to work here. He's huge old school Lucas guy. He's got all the old PC boxes because it's sometimes the only way to play them is to, you know, have these old discs or pirate them or something like that. So to see them sort of reaching into the archives and being like, yeah, if you like Star Wars stuff, like, we got tons of old Star Wars games. Like, pull them out. Like, yeah, I want to play Yoda Stories again, even though it sucks. I want to play Shadows of the Empire in widescreen. Yeah,
how awesome,
that game's not
how
great.
Awesome would it be if there was like a Rare Replay-esque thing where it was just, here's 30 old Star Wars games. Yeah, like Rare Replay, 15 of them are probably going to be awful, but like, it'd be awesome to just have a disc. That
and I almost wonder, I'm kind of expecting, as part of how they negotiated this, like, Nintendo to very soon announce, like, hey, Empire Jedi are coming, but only to Wii U. Like, because basically, like, why put Super Star Wars only on PS4? I think that's fascinating.
See, at the very least,
I think Super Star Wars will
I wish
come
that.
To
I don't see Nintendo doing that at all. I don't think they get it. Like
I'm not
Sony
even
does.
Saying to be cool. I'm saying as part of the negotiation, if this is exclusive to Nintendo, I would just be surprised to see this on PS4 and not Wii
U. But imagine if, like, Rogue Squadron came to PS4 or like Pod Racer 64 game.
I mean, I wonder what you even sell, because these are going to be free with this PS4.
Yeah.
But they'll obviously sell them piecemeal.
They're going to sell them standalone.
What do you
sell
a Super Nintendo game for on the PlayStation Store?
$15? $10?
What? $15?
No, I don't like, know. If everybody's gone to the Raptors, $20.
How much could one banana cost? $10?
Because they're like 7 or 8 on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Man.
I could see the PS2 games being like maybe like, you know, 7 or 10. You know, but
I love
they
the.
They're also touched up a little bit graphically, which is good. If that being said,
a couple of those games kind of suck. The Boba Fett game's not great, or the Jango Fett game, or whatever.
Yeah,
Boba Fett.
I would want to play Force Unleashed again, like if it's in widescreen or something like that, or HD. I mean, I like the idea of what you're saying of a sort of like, but it was HD like. What we thought HD was. It's the same thing with, like, we're getting a remade Gears of War from a 360 game, and it's like, but I would love the PS4 to slowly sort of just become this console that is a giant box that archives old Star Wars games.
Totally.
Like, that's really cool. Like, the Rare Replay thing, a lot of those games are bad, but I think it's kind of interesting to sort of track the trajectory in which they were made, especially being able to be like, here's how 12 different developers did the Battle of Hoth. Like, that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I want to see more. I would love to see certain, even like first party Sony studios release things like how awesome would a Naughty Dog collection be? Like, going all the way back to Jack and Dax.
Hey! No! That's a question. We're going to get into that later. So, but yeah.
It's right there. So, speaking of things from a long, long time ago getting re-released today. Uncharted Collection, some pretty recent games that are getting re-released in one big pretty package, all polished up real nicely, but with no multiplayer. But there's a bunch of new stuff that is coming to the Uncharted remastered. There's a photo mode, so you can take a picture of a man's big old muscular butt cheeks when he's hanging off a cliff.
I make fun of photo mode, but the pictures people got from Last of Us are like incredible, and from Second Son.
There is Explorer mode, which is basically making combat a little bit easier. So if you just want to kind of plow through a bunch of games and
look how he points at me.
This is actually pretty cool because it's I've beaten those games, and I think the least interesting part of them is when you're stuck in a circular canyon shooting 75 dudes.
This is like
40
perfect
minutes.
For replays.
It's like I'm not afraid to admit that I'll play a game on easy, and I'll play a game on baby if I want to play it again. Like, I've beaten Uncharted 3, 2, and 1, so if I want to go back and play it on Explorer mode and just see how beautiful it looks, totally.
Then there's a speedrun mode, which has a timer.
Yeah, that's literally the only thing that's different. Let's put a little clock in the corner.
It lets you know how fast you're doing it. And then there is brutal difficulty mode. After you beat Crushing, it unlocks that, and I guess it's it makes it so you can't kill anyone. You just keep shooting them until they get tired.
Have you guys played any of the Uncharted games on the hardest setting?
Two.
They're
very punishing. Yeah.
Yeah. That
I mean,
like,
it's not as hard as like Last of Us, but
no, Last of Us on the hardest setting was next to impossible.
I got eaten by a cordyceps.
Yeah. I actually like the Last of Us because it felt. It was down to that sort of like Resident Evil on hard type of thing, where like you have no bullets. It's all
and
about like inventory management
and getting through an encounter without.
Yeah, you don't want to engage in combat at all, but you don't really have that option in Uncharted. Like, it's literally clearing areas to advance, so it's very difficult. But for trophy hunters out there, that's huge.
One thing that's also really exciting, and I'm completely baffled by this. They say that there are over 65 skins that you can play through the single player with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're all the...
What?
They're all the, all the multiplayer skins. So it's like Fat Nathan Drake and like there are a whole bunch. Like,
I know. Like in this room, we could not make that list though. Like we could.
Yeah, sure.
Is it just like, here's Nathan Drake with a winter coat on. Here's Nathan Drake.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, okay. It's like all of the Uncharted Donut 3 Drake. Multiplayer skins basically, but you can use them in single player.
I hope there's going to be some new stuff there too. I will be very, very surprised if there is no Joel.
There's Party Sully.
I hope this
part. Oh, Joel would be cool.
I bet you Joel's going to be in there. I would like to see Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah,
like that'd be awesome. Like a like a realistic man looking Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah. Just even if it's just
like weird, Crash Bandicoot,
janky, but he's holding an AK-47.
He's got a beard God and a gun.
Or just Nolan North. Just a
version. Oh, that'd be awesome. Skin.
That would that would like again. That would not surprise me one bit. Joel and Nolan North are like two like skins that would just make a ton of sense.
I hope it's not just like Soldier 70 Saw 7 or whatever.
Here's Nathan Drake, but he's covered in gold. He's just a gold version of him.
It'll probably be that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do the last two.
Elena.
We'll do the last two real fast. Final Fantasy VII as a 2D brawler. This is really weird. It's like a fan-made project. It's cool, and like they put a lot of time into it. I'm not personally crazy about like the style they use.
I tried to go to the website, and it was down, so I don't know if they got a cease and desist.
Oh, they
fast.
Might have. Yeah.
Kind of a weird thing to be getting to try to remake it on the side when the other thing is getting legitimately.
Yeah, and I just don't.
Which just happened to
The Resident Evil.
Yeah, Resident Evil 2 remake got shut
down. So I love stuff like this. I love the people put the time in, like that incredible 3D Chrono Trigger remake people were making for years. Like, I love this stuff, but it's like, how do you not know at this point that you're going to get shut down? Like, why not put that time and effort into a new game, something that's been like these people are crazy talented and like you know this is a really cool way to get noticed but like you know it's going to get pulled down so
like it's like when I was growing up like my dad had George Carlin records and I would put them on and listen to them and then I would go to school and I would tell my friends those jokes or I would like trace the Ghostbusters logo to get good at drawing. Like you start doing stuff like this and these guys will get a cease and desist and then 5 years from now they'll be making a AAA game for EA. Like,
do you guys remember the time start somewhere. Brian admitted to stealing jokes?
Right there, yeah. I was in second grade.
Look at this fat Italian.
It's the kind of bittersweet double-edged sword of the internet is that people don't click on stuff if they don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But like that's why we get we get so many remakes and adaptations and sequels is people are like, oh, like Transformers, I know what that is, and they go see it and they're like, oh, it's nostalgic, it makes me feel good. Oh, or it's remastered. Oh, it's a familiar thing. Oh, it's the seventh movie in the series.
I do think this is pretty. It's pretty amazing that we've gotten so far away from it enough that we can nostalgically make kind of crappy 2D brawlers based on established franchises. Because there was a while where that was happening in the 90s, and it was just like they would take a movie and turn it into 2D brawler, or like what was it like? I think like stuff like Final Fight or like Mortal Kombat became a side scroller. Like things that like you don't expect to happen, like just became 2D brawlers, and they stopped doing that for a while because they were mostly bad, and now we can kind of go back to it. So that's pretty awesome. I would totally play a Final Fantasy.
Yeah, we haven't really had like aside from like Castle Crashers and the Scott Pilgrim game.
Yeah,
haven't been a lot of 2D brawlers.
Well, Scott Pilgrim is really fun.
Yeah, I love awesome. It when something is when you take a game and you remake it as exactly the opposite genre. You know,
mm-hmm.
like oh here's something that's strategic and menu heavy and very a lot of story, and then it's like oh you got to punch a guy in the air a bunch until he's dead. I mean, it's like when they did that bunch of Serious Sam games, like Devolver put those out. One of them was like a JRPG where you're just like adding giant guns on top of your guns and stuff.
Yeah, oh, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk 5 soundtrack. Yeah, like
why did you put this on this document?
We're all very old and we're all going to die because I know three of these bands.
Yeah,
I know Atmosphere. I know Death from Above.
Yeah,
I know 4 Year Strong.
And I know Rat-a-Tat. But yeah, it's just a bunch
Rat-a-Tat,
of
Rat-a-Tat, yeah.
It's yeah.
Anti-Flag, Doom Tree.
A lot of these don't sound real. Cloud Nothings is not a real band. Crass Mammoth is not a real band.
Yogi and Skrillex sounds like a cartoon I want to watch.
Oh my God, that's not. Well, you got Kiss and Scooby-Doo. It's not that far-fetched.
Yeah. I don't know. You guys, like, I'm on the review for this whenever it comes out at the end of September. Like, are you guys excited about this?
I mean,
like,
so
do you guys, like, where do you hold
I'm not
Tony
excited
Hawk?
By it. I am fascinated by the development, though, because it seems like it was shot out of a cannon. It's getting totally rushed. They completely switched the art style a month ago, which is like totally unheard of. And I think it was because they were getting a lot of complaints that the graphics weren't good, because they weren't. And they're like, shove a cel shading filter on it, and then we'll tell people it's art style. And it's just, I mean, to me, it looks like.
How did that not get focus grouped out?
Like,
the amount of like manpower and money and attention that goes into something like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5.
Yeah.
And nobody was like, these graphics look kind of crappy. Let's do something before we reveal
but
them.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's like I did like a bunch of Activision interviews at E3 and Gamescom, and I kind of always forget this is even coming. Like I don't think they are treating it like a big, like,
no, they're
like
not.
Look at how they're treating Guitar Hero, right? This is like a big, like, revival of a franchise, right. And like, it's like everywhere, and it's like a big push, and they have like all this marketing for it, and like Tony Hawk, like, until a story like this pops up, I completely forget that it right. exists. So like, I think, like, my guess is that they got pitched on it. Like, I don't think they recruited a developer, but I don't know. It's like, I'm super interested. Like, I don't think this is going to do well, and this is probably the nail in the coffin for the franchise.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, this is supposed to be them coming back after there were already 7 nails in the coffin in a row.
Sure.
And then you take a few. I mean, by the time, like, the Tony Hawk games were.
Tony Hawk won't stay in his coffin. Break it out.
He's skating on it. Tony Hawk games were a running joke when I first started working in this industry. By then, they were so. It was like, what was it? Tony Hawk Ride. There was Tony Hawk Air. There was
American Wasteland.
American Wasteland. I mean, there was a bunch of DS ones that were cel shaded. Like,
well, that's what Activision does with their franchises, though. Like,
yeah,
it's just interesting because
I mean, it's just nuts to look at the series that, like, Tony Hawk, like, 1 and 2 on PS1 and then 3 on PS2 were, like, legitimate Game of the Year contenders.
Yep.
Like, it was getting 9s and 10s. Like, 3, I still go back and play because it's incredible. But, yeah, it's just sort of what happens when you try to release yearly installments of a series that shouldn't have it.
Well, I think it was even more than that. It was yearly installments that they were constantly trying to change the formula.
Yeah, like, you can get off your board now. It's like, well, no one like,
they
wants
were,
that.
They
and
were
the awful ride peripheral.
Yeah, like, they were needlessly kind of messing with, like, the downhill jam or whatever it was one of them or something. And it was just all skating down a hill.
Yeah.
Like, why?
There's Tony Hawk Dirty Dogs?
Yeah, just give people prettier and prettier and more innovative and cooler looking sandboxes to skate in every single year. Like, sell extra warehouses and you know, the alien town or whatever as DLC, like $5 a park or whatever. Like,
how has nobody modded skateboarding into GTA 5 yet?
They probably have.
Is there no skateboarding in that game?
No.
Really?
There's BMX bikes and there's.
Interesting.
What if you could
turn into a hawk?
What if you could be a dog and get on a literal hawk?
I mean, even like there was a while where that sounds like the
you
way can better
do,
game.
Do peyote and become a hawk. That's like a Stony Hawk kind of.
But even like EA's games like Skate. Like, why did those stop?
I don't know, because Justin Rubio was in the soundtrack. That's why.
Really?
Yeah, he has a song in the soundtrack.
I like how that was.
Shout out to Justin Rubio.
Justin Rubio.
Going back to feeling old because we don't know some of the artists on this track list. I want to point out that when we were younger, we didn't know everybody on the lineup for the Tony Hawk soundtracks either.
Yeah.
Like, there was true. That was like somebody's first exposure to like Goldfinger or CKY or whatever,
Tribe Called Quest or something.
Yeah. Like, there's always that sense. Oh, some of these are big kid bands. Like,
wow,
I don't know.
What's a funky Homo sapien?
I don't know who put Hob on here.
But yeah, I don't know. This jumped out at me. I put that on there. The guys who made Torchlight have a game coming out called Hob. Which did you guys ever play Torchlight at all?
No, that's the one that's. It was like Diablo, right?
Yeah, it was kind of on PC and sort of in the works around the same time Diablo 3 was hotly anticipated, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, well, I'm just going to wait for Diablo, and it wound up being, like, super, in kind of in the same way that I feel like Dark Souls came out, like, a week after Skyrim or whatever.
Yeah.
And kind of in time since then, everyone went back, and they were like, oh, this is actually really good, too, in a different way. Torchlight was kind of all the cool stuff, all the cool, like, dungeon crawly loot stuff from Diablo 2, I feel like. I didn't get that into it, but I played a bit of it, and...
Yeah.
These guys have a new game in the works called Hob that is really pretty.
Yeah,
it does look really pretty. Yeah.
Looks kind of like you know, in the same pile as like what is it, Rhyme and that just like colorful fantasy stuff a little bit like Below, just very kind of Zelda like, I guess.
Yeah.
No, so I don't know.
Yeah,
worth keeping an eye on. We have a question from Matt B.
Hey Matt.
This question is for everyone, but especially Max. That's why I picked it. I'm Max. I can't say a word. Why do I record myself talking all the time? With the new Metal Gear coming out, I started wondering how good you are at Metal Gear. Do you find yourself starting out a mission trying to sneak, but it ends up turning to a bloodbath? Or are you able to stay stealthy for the most part? Thanks, and beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond. I'm really, really bad at stealth games.
Really?
I've always been incredibly bad at stealth games because I feel like I generally overthink how smart the AI is, and then I screw up. Like when I'm aware of what they're doing, I'm like too aware. It's basically just like any social interaction where I'm like, oh my god, they're on to me. They know I'm a fraud, and they're gonna catch me, and I'm gonna screw this up. And then on some completely unrelated thing, I'll like walk into a chair and it'll fall over, and everyone's like, what's he doing?
There's something I really love about playing stealth games, even though you're not great at them, because I've been doing the same thing for years, and it's really they're almost like there's this sort of like comical zaniness to them when do that, because you're just sort of like, you're crouching and you're sneaking and scurrying along, and the guy's looking, he's like, I clearly see you. 25 people call, like, I always do the thing in Splinter Cell games where I will stealthily take out 12 people in a row, one guy will see me, and I'm just like, everybody has to die now!
There's something weirdly, there's something weirdly gratifying to that when, like, you sound the alarm or whatever, but then you kill 40 dudes or whatever, like, even though you weren't supposed to do it that way.
Yeah.
Because the other way, like, I've done the thing where you put, like, 9 dudes in a pile carefully in a closet.
Oh, the old man pile.
No one finds you.
So,
and then,
what got me about Metal Gear, and I'm really, really excited because I think that Phantom Pain is just going to just not even scratch this itch. It's going to be like when a dog is on the floor and just, like, scratching his tummy, and he's like, oh, I'm having these, it's a good time for me and the dog. I like messing with the AI. I like screwing around and just basically... It's like hide and seek crossed with like pranks as a kid.
Yeah.
You know? Like when you're being mischievous, like that's what I like. I like mischief in a game, not so much like tactical espionage. You know, that's never been the thing that drew me to it. Some people like to be like, I'm going to sneak through. I'm never going to be seen. I'm playing this on extra hard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to finish this and it's going to give me Big Boss's mustache. It's going to spit it out of the CD drive. I'm going to get to put it on and I'm going to turn invisible when that happens. You know, it's like the crazy crap you unlock. It's going to tell me that I'm an ultimate phantom. That's my new code name, you know. I don't know. But like I like Metal Gear because I distinctly remember playing the first one with the stealth suit on that my friend unlocked because I'm bad at the game. I think you have to beat that on like normal or something. It was his console. But he had the stealth suit and we would do the thing where we would be in the armory and there's that one trap door and we'd be tiptoeing around and we'd scare a guy or we'd turn the stealth suit off and just like basically appear like a ghost in front of him and then turn it back on and then run down the hallway and like, I don't know, jump over the trapdoor or whatever and then trick him into walking into a pit.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's not so much that we like this cinematic storytelling or this like really, you know, this interesting strategy. We like making a man fall in a hole.
Yep.
In the same way that we like shooting a guy in the arm in Metal Gear 2 mm-hmm. and he can't reach for his walkie-talkie and so he's like running around. Yep. Like it's like pulling arms off a fly, the video game.
You know? No, I love that stuff. And you like, are you hit somebody with a rock or you hit somebody, there's a shoot a bullet behind somebody and they're like, what was that noise? Nothing, I guess. So you just go back to standing at the front of the wall.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, Metal Gear is always like hit pretty hard back. Like, even playing it on, you know, wussy mode, it's always been like pretty punishing if you mm-hmm. get caught. It seems like Phantom Pain, I got the sense with Ground Zeroes to a certain extent, but it seems like Phantom Pain is gonna kind of let you play it. Like play it real loud if you want to. Like,
yeah,
they're showing off some like you can call in an airstrike, which is pretty much like the ultimate. Screw it, I lost that. You know, like, oh, they caught me in my box. I'm going to burn them to the ground.
Yeah.
I got busted.
I think that's like most modern stealth games now, right?
Yeah.
Like there aren't really a ton of like pure stealth games. Like even the Splinter Cell games start you with machine guns in most of the stages. Mm-hmm. It's not really walking around with that like little pop gun and like a tin can to throw to annoy somebody.
Yeah, if you chose to play Dishonored Stealth, I think it did it really, 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 really well. Yeah.
But even though, you know, Dishonored still gives you the option.
You don't have to do
everything.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I like Far Cry because it's like dumb Metal Gear,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it seems like the new one is kind of taking some cues from Far Cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I like that you're this like tribal tattooed dude bro who's like, I'm going to sneak up on these idiots. And you just throw a rock and they're like, hey, what was that? And mm-hmm. then you set fire to everything and then bears come out. And like, this mm-hmm. is
that's so much Far Cry fun. 3 is so good.
I'm really bummed we're not getting a Far Cry this year, by the way.
Yeah.
That I'm cool like, if they like, I didn't even for, I for a minute.
Didn't know? Play 1 second of 4.
Really?
Yeah.
I had a great time with 4.
Well, it just came out,
but
also, around the same time. What did we got? We got announced, we're not getting this for till like 2019 or whatever, but the Tom Clancy Ghost Wildlands.
Oh, Wildlands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one's like cool. Really open.
That's looks, our next Far Cry game.
That
basically.
Looks like four player third person.
But that's the thing. That one has like no. It's like completely. It seems like there's not even like a mission structure or anything. Like that is like as open as it's possible to be.
Well, that's fine because that's always my least favorite part of the Far Cry games. Like every time the story is just sort of like, hey, I'm over here. And you're like, oh, I got to talk to you again. I'd rather just like take over outposts and stuff like that, you know?
Sure.
All right. Should we talk about the drop? The
drop
games,
that DAC.
All the games that are coming. I don't know why I wrote drop that DAC. What do we say in this?
We've been saying the word DAC a lot in the
we
office.
We say DAC. No one knows what it means.
I think I know what it means.
DAC Ralter is Luke Skywalker's co-pilot who died in the Battle of Hoth. There's a little fun fact for you. Crash that snow
speeder. Does that man have a deck?
Also, everyone calls them rebel snow speeders, but they're actually just regular air speeders that were outfitted for Hoth's awful climate. We got Adventures of Pip coming to PS4 Digital.
It's a little platform.
Interesting game, actually.
You play as
that.
A square in a so world you, of other squares.
So, you actually start as a pixel from like original games, and you can turn into an 8-bit character and a 16-bit character.
Oh, wow.
But the world is almost always none of those things. So it's sort of artistically not super cohesive, but platforming-wise, it's pretty fun, and it's just sort of interesting being able to basically turning into a pixel is kind of like your morph ball in this game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's cool.
Arcade Archives Bomb Jack.
Nope.
That's a 1984 game that Jared Petty could tell us a lot about, but he's not here.
It's his favorite tandy
game. PS4 Digital. Then there's The Bridge, which is coming to PS4, PS3, PS Vita. Digital through a cross-buy. That looks like an M.C. Escher painting.
Yeah. It's a really cool puzzle game. It's been out on PC for a while. Cool stuff. Check it out.
Cool time.
Yeah.
Color Guardians Demo. PS4 Digital. I don't know. What's that at Color Guardians?
No, they're just
different. So you're in the Color Guard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Curses and Chaos. Going to PS4 and PS Vita. Digital cross-buy.
Oh, it makes me so happy how many of these are on Vita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The little indie machine that could.
This next one's got a lot of words in it.
Are you ready for it? Nope. Are you ready for the words? There's going to be a bunch of them in one game title. Dungeon Travelers 2, The Royal Library, and The Monster Seal. That's coming to PS Vita.
That sounds really scary.
JRPG.
Yeah.
Gianna Sisters, Dream Runners, PS4.
Gianna Sisters is the game that is a blatant ripoff of Mario.
Yeah, so it's actually funny because the game started as a ripoff of Mario back in the 80s, but they've still kept making it, and it's actually become its own sort of franchise, which is really interesting. The last Gianna Sisters game before this one was sort of about good and evil, and you could click a button and turn the entire world from good to evil on the fly. So you're in like happy, happy land, and you press a button and you're in hell.
So not only is it a Mario ripoff, it's also a Zelda ripoff.
Yes, totally. They're going through the whole history.
All right, there's Helldivers Super Earth Ultimate Edition for PS4, PS3, PS Vita, and that is actually coming to retail. That's Helldivers and all of the bells and whistles of DLC that it came with.
The hells and whistles.
Hells and whistles. Shut up, Marty. I like this because it sounds like an R&B collection. It's called Pure Hold'em.
Yeah. I was, you know, I've, for decades now, I've been playing all this tainted, unpure Hold'em games. So it's good to finally get some purity in my Hold'ems.
How When I hold you, it's real pure. I love to hold. It's the certain purity in the life. This just get,
are these lyrics?
Candles get lit, and the bath is nice. Just
gotta power through it.
Come in the warm bath.
Oh, I don't want to go in your bath.
Was that a Taylor Swift line?
I don't know. Even the little box art. They don't have box art because it's a digital game. But the little image they put up for this was just like it looked like a bunch of poker chips by candlelight. I'm like, this is like
it's so weird.
Maybe people have erotic poker. Not even strip poker. It's like you play a game and then you go bang out.
This isn't in relation to anything. But I went to Taylor Swift this weekend with Greg Miller, and it was an amazing show. But halfway through the show, she's like, I have a really fantastic surprise for all of you.
Pure Hold'em is coming to play us.
Please welcome Joan Baez and Julia Roberts. And they just came out and they didn't say anything. They just like came out and like waved, and then she like shoot them off stage. And we're like, what just happened? Like, why did they? And like Julia Roberts is just like confused and wearing a t-shirt and like, why am I here?
She like brought her niece and they just pulled her up from the crowd.
Yeah, it was a real weird thing.
Bet you Emma Roberts was pissed. Yeah.
I saw Greg's tweet and he's like, Taylor Swift just thanked me for coming to the show. And I was like, she did that to everybody.
She thanked everyone. She's like, I thank each and every one of you in the audience. Greg took that personally.
No, I like that joke. I knew that tweet was a joke. It was cute.
Yes.
Greg was all excited. That was cute.
Tales from the Borderlands, Episode 4.
Yeah.
Marty, you reviewed it?
Yeah, I reviewed it. This isn't going on. Yeah, it's not good.
No.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Really?
It's really not good.
How not good? Well,
I gave it a 6. It's by far the worst episode of Tales from the Borderlands so far. I think the first 3 have been incredible.
Episode 4, it's like...
This continues Telltale's curse of Episode 4s.
Wow.
Wolf Among Us, Walking Dead, just not great. Yeah, it's really short. It's not nearly as funny. It doesn't have poignant character moments like the other ones. It doesn't really advance the full story. Someone climaxed in the room next to us.
I don't know if that picks up on the audio at home, but... You can write email walls at ign.com and tell them they're doing a real bad job.
Don't go in Vault 101. There's a situation.
Yeah, we actually, that's really awesome that there's a Fallout game coming out this fall, and we got an email sent to our entire company today saying that there's a situation in our Vault 101, our Fallout-themed conference room.
Rad roaches!
And they're like,
apparently,
you can't go in there. There is a situation. Seriously, don't go in there. And of course, all of us are all like,
yeah, Liam Neeson is talking to a baby in there.
What?
Oh, I guess you didn't play Fallout.
Liam Neeson's the father in Fallout 3.
That was Zan. That was
the opening of the game.
There's a baby.
Yeah, that's we have game themed conference rooms at IGN.
Yeah.
We have a portal themed one, and GLaDOS will interrupt meetings and just talk for like 15 seconds straight.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's really annoying. Anyway, moving on. The Quiet Collection, PS Vita Digital. What's that about? Anyone?
It's actually pronounced. It's the Quiet Collection.
Well, quite.
That's quite a collection.
Resident Evil Revelations 2, the episodic one that came out earlier this year, is coming to Vita. So if you want to play, if you want a monster in your pocket, here you go. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, this game's it's weird because they started as handheld games, the Revelations games, on 3DS.
That's right,
on 3DS. Yep.
So,
and that's also where the first ever CirclePad Pro shipped with that game.
Shut up, Andrew.
That's right.
PlayStation podcast. Crying was unconvincing, too.
But my news!
And here's the last one. This is, I apparently missed this one. Zombie. The
Zombie U
without the Wii U. This was the Wii U game that Ubisoft really threw a lot of time and energy into and then realized it was on a platform that wasn't doing
but it's
so
like,
hot.
I like
really liked this game.
That was the thing. Greg reviewed it, didn't like it at the time, but that game kind of has a cult following. It's actually like really
It'd
punishing.
Really and smart use of the gamepad in a way that a few things have. Like there is no pausing, and so
well, it's a first person survival horror roguelike.
And when you die, you just become another survivor, and you can go and find zombies
and find your old stuff.
Find your own backpack.
I think that's so cool. And they're doing a really smart thing where, like, so the way it worked on the gamepad was if you looked, or on the Wii U rather, if you look down at the gamepad, like away from the TV, like you can still get killed, like stuff's still happening. Yeah. So the way they did it in this is that if you pause and pull up your inventory, it doesn't actually pause the game. Like you're still vulnerable in that moment, which is a good.
I think in terms of the first-person zombie games that have come out recently between this and Dying Light, I actually prefer this because of the setting is really cool. Like you're in
London.
You're in London, and it's like everything just feels wet and gross and disgusting. The only thing that my main concerns
were... Sorry, UK listeners.
Sorry about that.
I mean, London's a little wet and gross and disgusting. It's a wonderful city. But
your melee weapons are kind of limited. Like, it's mostly you have a couple of guns and you have
a cricket bat.
But from what I hear, I think they're coming out with... There's new melee weapons in this one. So if this is budget price, I don't think they're... They're not doing a ton with the graphics, so it's not going to look amazing, but
it was
it's
a pretty
totally,
good-looking game.
Totally a fun game.
The thing I'm curious about is the zombie, you obviously used the hell out of the gamepad.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about how this is going to be handled on PS4?
Yeah, and I don't know the multiplayer was really cool.
So that's the only thing they're not bringing over is the multiplayer.
Yeah, the multiplayer was cool because it was like asymmetrical where someone was a survivor trying to survive and you were almost like a dungeon master on the gamepad, like placing zombies.
Right.
Like you were spending currency to place zombies in different places and different times.
So that's the only thing that's not making it over. But other than that, check it out. And if you have a Wii U and you haven't played it and you don't want to buy it full price, it's like I saw it for like $7 on Amazon or something the other day. So
all right.
We did it, guys.
Sweet. So now it's time for Rapid Fire. I went in the Podcast Beyond Facebook group. That's facebook.com/podcastbeyond. And I asked you questions. I got 370 questions in an hour at the time of this writing. And we are going to answer 5 of them today. So Kyle Grosser asks, if Sony has to create a parallel to Rare Replay, which studio should they use?
LucasArts.
Oh, wow. Wow, we did. We did it.
Yeah, we kind of touched on that. And you're a big fan of Rare Replay, right? You reviewed it, gave it
Rare
a 9.
Rare Replay is awesome. I think we were talking about this, like, what studios make sense?
I mean, Naughty Dog has the history and the franchises, but they have, like, there's too many. Naughty Dog would be really weird and complicated because, like, they're the past, 9 games are, like, current gen games.
Yeah. But so it's like having the Crash games, having Jack and Daxter.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Jack X.
It's just weird because there is that Jack collection.
Jack X.
I think it's good with them, too, because they didn't... Did they do any licensed games? I think they did very early on, right? I know we did a history thing on them at some point.
I don't know,
But the thing that really hung up the Rare Replay collection was that, like, a third of their games were stuck behind walls somewhere else.
Yeah, it was either a Donkey Kong game or a
Diddy Kong Racing, Donkey Kong Country, GoldenEye, like some of the ones that you're like, oh man, I love Rare. I can't wait to play. Oh, no, it's not there. You know, so it's kind of missing a lot of the greatest hits.
Yeah, I don't know if Insomniac. You can go back to the Spyro games and then all the way through Infamous stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't. I mean, that's the weird, it's the same problem, right? Like, there are so few of these studios that Sony owns, like, right? Like, Insomniac is independent. So it's like, Sony probably owns most of those Sony games, but you couldn't go back and do, like, a full Insomniac library, probably. I guess maybe you could. I don't know. It's really interesting. Like, the rights that tie up these things are fascinating. Like, Activision would have to co-publish the Crash parts. And, like, same thing with Rare Replay. Like, there are so many gates, basically, that prevent this content.
You could do a smaller sort of media molecule one. It would be...
Sure.
It'd be tiny.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said LucasArts. I mean, obviously, like, Microsoft owns Rare, but Rare has a way longer legacy than Microsoft has. Yeah. And I don't have, has Sony scooped up any studios that have been around for that long? Or have they mostly came to be existence around the same time the PlayStation
was? I mean, it's like a lot of the studios that have closed, like, you could still go back and do retrospectives of what they did. I mean, like, there are studios that have been around for long enough that you could do something interesting. I mean, like, Bend is a really interesting studio, but it's like, you're not going to get, you know, like, a Siphon Filter collection would be really interesting, but I don't know that you would get. That doesn't scratch the itch that, like, Rare Replay scratched.
Yeah. Well, like, so there weren't PlayStation games in the 80s, whereas Rare was making Jetpack.
Exactly. And Slalom.
Well, I'd love to see Squaresoft.
Yeah. You know? That would be amazing. If you almost did it by eras, like there the PS1 go. Era Square games, like everything from Final Fantasy VII to Air Guys to
I would love to do the math on how many hours it would take to complete every game in a collection like that. Like, the Squaresoft collection would be a 10,000 hours at least.
So one of the other ones someone mentioned once was a BioWare one, but I'm like, that would be so huge.
Yep. That's right.
That sounds exhausting.
Good question, Kyle. Thank you. Beyond. Tyler Floyd asked, how do you balance time between work, relationships, and gaming? We get this question a lot.
Poorly.
And
the problem is, like, one of them doesn't happen. Yeah. Like, that's the weird thing is figuring out, like, that work-life balance thing.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of the time that means, like, falling behind on games.
Yeah, I mean, work-life balance is tough in every job.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but a lot of times, like, we're so ingrained in games and staring at monitors and screens all day that when I leave, I don't want to do that.
Yep. So, let me ask you this, Marty, because I wanted to ask you this anyway, but now we're on microphones. Don't do it here or wherever you're going to hear. When do you play all these games? Because you review more games than anybody in this room and probably anybody in this company.
Yeah,
but do you hide in a room and just play most of them at work or like?
Yeah, I mean, I luck out because I review a lot of games, but most of them are short.
Yeah,
like
episodes of
Indie Cash. Like, I'm not reviewing like Witcher and Dragon Age and stuff. Yeah, I play a lot of my games at work. I'll play, you know, I'll get up early in the morning on like a Saturday or Sunday and put in a couple hours.
Yep.
Or I'll just take a day off and actually just play a ton of games. But yeah, I mean, having that balance is huge, especially when like we all read and we all watched a ton of movies and TV shows and stuff. So, like, something has to give. And a lot of times, for me, it's longer games.
Yeah.
I think that... You were really good at this for a while. You used to come in at, like, 9:30 and be like, I got up at 6 and I played 3 hours of blah, blah, blah. Like,
I get a lot of my media out of the way in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I catch up. I catch up on most of my television before work because my wife goes to work earlier than I do. And I have, like, an extra hour or two to, like... check up on emails, work on music, watch Hannibal, and then I will walk to work and then get here at normal time. But yeah, I kind of like that rather than staying up to like – I don't like to stay up to like 3 o'clock in the morning playing video games anymore. Yeah. I can't. But the other thing is like – I mean, we kind of have a cheat here in that like friends and family members and wives and girlfriends and fiancés and stuff like that kind of understand what we do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little easier for me to be like, honey, I'm going to play – blah, blah, blah on the TV for a couple hours. I think that, like, if you...
Because sometimes you literally have to.
You kind of have to. And I think if you had just any other job, and it'd be kind of harder to be like, I got to stay up and finish this game. Like, if I'm on a spoiler cast the next day and we're talking about The Last of Us, I'm staying up and I'm finishing The Last of Us. Like, the, what was it, Left Behind DLC?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I beat that on basically before work. Same with BioShock Infinite. Like, I finished it before work and I got on the train and I got to work and we did content on it. And it was sort of just like my wife brought me coffee that morning and put my breakfast in front of me and I'm just like, I got to finish this. And
yeah.
I don't think a lot of other significant others would put up with that kind of crap because
you need
a good excuse.
Does she get a sense of when you're playing something for fun or when you're like...
Totally.
Because like I was mostly playing Arkham Knight after a certain point. I was playing that kind of just as like... kind of trying to get to the next part of it. Like, I was kind of just killing time.
Yeah.
And she'd come over and I'd be like fighting these same dumb tanks and just like crashing through stuff. And she'd be like, can we go do something? And I'm like, I'm, Yeah, we can go do something.
I mean, I was playing Everybody's Gone to the Rapture this weekend. I wasn't really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. Like, and she noticeably saw me frustrated, kind of being like, what do they want me to do? What am I supposed to... I hate this town. But you know, it's fine. Like, yeah, it's all things considered, we make it work. Like, yeah, like everybody makes
but
it
you're,
work.
But your, I mean, your fiance doesn't play games really, right?
I'm married.
I don't know why I said that. I gotta, that's weird.
No, she'll play games with me every now and then. Something, you know, kind of stupid.
But like, I got a question actually on Tumblr from somebody, which I thought was kind of interesting. Tied to this, I won't name him in case he wants to be anonymous. He says, "You ever get bored of your hobbies? Lately, I can't bring myself to play games or consume games media except Beyond." Mm-hmm. Thank you. My time spent doing that has been spent reading, playing guitar, and mountain biking. I can't help feeling that video games and consuming hours of gaming coverage a day is ultimately a waste of my limited time. You know what? I don't know if waste is the right word exactly, but I think it's worth pointing out that games are often the most bloated medium. Mm-hmm. They are massive, sprawling things, and in order to experience them in their entirety, you have to, like, you cannot get through certain games in less than 20 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a huge amount of time, you know?
Well, like, you were saying recently about how games are the only medium that kind of push you back, right? Like, a movie is sort of like, watch me, and a book's like, read me, but a game is sort of like, I'm going to kill you a bunch of times, you have to keep replaying this one scene over and over. I don't think they're a waste of time. I think that sometimes they can be diversions from actual responsibilities or things like that. And I do think that it is totally okay to kind of cyclically fall in and out of love with video games as a medium and as a hobby. Like, I'll have times where I sit down in front of every console and every handheld and every game on my iPhone and PC and everything else, and I'll just go, I don't have anything to play. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of like a kid being on the internet and being like, I'm bored. And you're like, how are you bored? You have unlimited.
No, it's all unlimited. It's your mindset. You
yeah.
Know? Like, we've talked about on the show before, but like, there's the reason I haven't played the Mass Effect games and Fallout 3 is because there was like a 2-year span where I just stopped playing a lot of games.
Yeah.
And like, it was long before I worked at 1UP or IGN. Yeah. And I just sort of like, I still had my PS3 hooked up and I still would occasionally play. Like, I remember playing like Braid and.
Did you consider yourself like having quit games then?
It was like, it wasn't really,
I know I came very
yeah,
close to that.
It was just sort of like I was writing a lot and I was reading a lot and I'd like recently moved to San Francisco and so I was like learning the city and everything.
Right.
And it's that weird thing of not making that conscious choice. It's not like I quit games forever, but it's more like there's more important stuff or just things that are more attractive.
Yeah, it's weird.
I took a long gap too.
I mean, there's that stigma about like, oh, you're a casual, you're not doing the thing. We talk about this sometimes and I like it's if you played every single game that came out this year. Like, tally the hours. Like, see how much time that takes, you know? And if you want to tack on multiplayer and how long it takes to really get the full experience out of something like that, it's crazy, you know? Like, there are a lot of games I haven't played, and I feel this weird kind of sense of guilt about it.
Yep.
And then I'm like, why?
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's a ton of stuff I've done. I've seen a ton of movies. I've read a lot of books. I've read a lot of comics. I've met a lot of people. I've gone places. I've eaten tons of food. I've learned how to do stuff. I've created things. And it's like, someone's, oh, but you didn't finish this? I'm like,
yeah.
Well, like, I mean, I don't want to sound harsh, but I do kind of feel like you're not actually doing anything when you're playing a video game. Like, I mean, I love what I do for a living. I love that we get to do the show. But when you beat a video game, it is a minor accomplishment. But you haven't actually gone anywhere or done anything. It is a giant diversion from other things. And the same thing goes with any
art.
It's all art and all.
Well, video games are like the heroine of escapism.
Yes. Yeah.
They are the most like just distilled, like, here is a world you can explore. You can meet people and you can talk to them and you can ride a horse.
And it's like, that's why it's rare. It is rare that a video game is so truly immensely satisfying from start to finish that by the time you're done with it, you can kind of step away and go like, man, that was great. Like, that's kind of how I felt with The Last of Us, where it was sort of, and people always go back to that game, but it just felt like a thing from start to finish and it was paced excellently and there wasn't really a lot of like a Batman, I feel like there was a lot of bloat that I got lost in on the sides, and I didn't feel that way. And it's kind of why I prefer single player games a lot, because you can sort of like focus in on something and feel accomplished afterwards. But yeah, man, thank you, Tyler. That was a great conversation.
Yeah.
We'll do one more. Matthew Murphy asks, which fall game will be the Assassin's Creed Unity of this year? And like, I want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means exactly. That wasn't like necessarily a bad game. I think that was a game that a lot – you enjoyed it. You didn't really run into a lot
of
the technical
issues. Which is the Frenchest game of the year.
The Frenchest game, of the year.
I guess like what game is going to become like the – is there a game that's going to launch with problems that sort of becomes this like controversy?
Because I kind of feel like it was sort of unfair the what Assassin's Creed Unity got last year of like this massive sprawling open world designed by hundreds, if not thousands, of talented people is remarked only for the fact that every now and then in one in a million games, a woman's eyeballs bug out and make her look like a monster person.
Like, so aside from, there was some weird stuff.
Yeah.
There were people walking on top of crowds.
And, yeah, there were, I mean,
they had, haunted
fluttering hoop skirts.
Just need a little bit more QA, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's maybe going to be a multiplayer-centric one. I don't know if something like Battlefront is going to have problems at launch, or if Halo 5 is going to have problems at launch.
I hope that yeah. Microsoft's learned their lesson from Hitman's
I don't think they would let... They would not let Halo have that happen again, I'm guessing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think... It's the kind of thing that you don't know until it just randomly pops up.
Yeah.
I think the one that has the most chance of having something that's not game-breaking, but sort of just like angering a lot of people at the same time because they didn't really test on the fly is Fallout 4. I feel like that's the one that's going to have like one anomaly where it's like every time there's three dogs on screen, everyone dies. And you're like, what? Like,
yeah, I mean, like
patching it. Don't worry.
Right, Fallout 3 had plenty, not as bad as New Vegas, which was like super crazy buggy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Fallout 3 had a lot. I think, honestly, I would expect Battlefront, just like after what Battlefield 4 went through, I would expect there to be issues with Battlefront, actually, now that I think about it.
You think so? How was Hardline? How did that go?
I honestly don't know.
Hardline, they pushed it back like a good few months.
Yeah, like almost 6 months. Its launch was a lot smoother than
the launch was pretty smooth.
I think that people kind of have bad taste in their mouth after, you know, Battlefield 4.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my optimistic answer to this is hopefully none of them. Like, I think people are learning their lessons. I think the hardware can handle more now. I'm hoping that this is finally the year when, like, devs know this hardware well enough that, like, maybe they've learned to test for it. And, like, inevitably every game has some kind of issues, but I'm hoping there is no Unity this fall. That would be nice.
Yeah, I think because Unity was the first one that wasn't just a port of a current gen game, right?
Unity also was. I mean, keep
it
in
was
mind
built
that
ground
like
floor.
They built a co-op system in a franchise that never had it. Like, it had a lot of stuff it was trying to deal with under the hood, in addition to just being a functional Assassin's Creed game.
Ambitious.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't want. It's like, I don't know. I didn't play that much of Unity, but it bums me out when games are remembered only for the bugs, because like I feel like that dissuaded Ubisoft away from experimenting within the Assassin's Creed universe, which isn't great, because I don't want to get the same game every year.
Yeah, I mean, like, we do that as gamers a lot, right? Like, we focus on the one weird thing, and it's like there's a billion beautiful things in this game, you know, and it fundamentally mostly works. And I know, like, your experience may vary, but like I feel like we got to get better at that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I get it, because like, I mean, we're sitting atop our throne of getting to play most of these games for free. Like, if you spend $60 in a game and it's a buggy mess and doesn't function, that's disastrous and that's not good, right?
Yeah.
So like, I understand the outrage, and people should let the publishers know that that's not okay and that those games don't function. Like, that's a bad thing. But at the same time, like, I don't know, like, I'd like to see people kind of trying to stay positive when they can. I can only imagine how frustrating that must be when, you know, you get two games for Christmas and both of them don't work. That's not great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I would like to see this fall not have a game like that, but we'll see.
I kind of like when Fallout is like, I excuse Fallout a little bit when it's janky because it's not ludonarrative dissonance.
Yes.
To be the whole world is broken. Everybody's mutated and has cancer. If something doesn't work, it kind of makes sense.
It's not like there's a monster on a roof in Paris and it makes no sense. But it totally makes sense in Fallout when like a leg gets glitched through a wall for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Same with. I mean, also we had Skyrim since then. That was. I mean, there were a little bit buggy weirdness in there, but it worked
especially
pretty well
on
the
PlayStation.
I don't think we have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. We're good.
Anyway. That's about all we have for today. If you would like to email us, we are just beyond@ign.com. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Marty is McBiggity with two G's and two T's.
Yes, sir.
Brian is Agent Bizzle. And Mr. Phones-a-Lot over here is Garfep.
I'm a busy man. I apologize.
Typey-typey Angry Birds, huh?
Typey-typey Angry Birds.
Yeah. Anybody
Angry
have
Birds
a
too.
Thing they want to recommend
guys,
real quick? Before
I recommend
we...
Up at Noon.
Oh, yeah.
What's that about?
Max and I just launched a new weekly live comedy variety show.
Based on the hit Water Bottle.
Up at Noon is the latest Richard Linklater film.
That's right.
People sleeping in together.
So if you know me from back in the day, I used to do a show with Greg Miller called Up at Noon. It was sort of like a scripted, monologue-driven show that then went into an interview thing. I did that for a while, and we didn't want to do it again. So Max and I, because we are so wonderful and fun, off the cuff with no script.
Chuckle, chuckle.
Just flying blind.
I made an Angry Birds joke mere seconds ago.
That's right.
It was
good.
Great.
We launched a new show. You can watch it. You can actually interact with us while we're doing the show. It's every Thursdays at noon Pacific time, or 3 p.m. New York time, or other clocks and other times, and I don't know how they work.
It'll be 9 p.m. in Germany.
Tune in and check that out. Yeah. Also, Goldfarb, you were on my other show, The Comedy Button, this week.
I was.
You and Max talked about your trip to Germany.
Did you talk about the Spider-Man video?
Oh. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
And they took that video on tour.
We actually put that video on Up at Noon.
Good.
Because we will not let that die. Yeah.
Also, if you go look up Seth Macy on Twitter, he edited, I don't know if you've seen this yet.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, he took the Macy Gray Green Goblin scene from Spider-Man 1.
I like that is the Macy Gray Green Goblin scene.
Of course it is.
Not the parade scene, but the Macy Gray scene.
That's what I remember it for. But he edited the crappy German Green Goblin over the Willem Dafoe Green Goblin. It's really good.
I gotta admit, the first time I saw that video, I was kind of like, I don't really get what the fuss is about. But the more I think about it and the more I've seen it, I laugh every time I think. Every time I think of that Green Goblin's face.
Spider-Man!
So good. That and the behind the back. Pumpkin toss are my favorite.
So weird. Jenna is so uncomfortable watching it that she has to leave the room.
Really?
She panics and she's like, covers her ears and she runs out of the room.
So good.
I love that.
On that note, thank you guys all for listening. Beyond.
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 Beyond. Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Spider-Man.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.